Hi there, and welcome to Open Mic here on Morehead State Public Radio. I'm your host, Leanne Akers, and today we're visiting with Rowan County Superintendent of Schools, John Maxey. John, thanks so much for being on the show.
Hello, and great to be on your show today.
We're talking a little bit about some changes. Everything has kind of been in flux for preparing for the fall semester for all K through 12 schools across the nation. Here in Kentucky, the plan was to open soon, the third week of August, with different options for parents, but everything changed at the beginning of the week. The governor gave a recommendation, and each school district had to make a decision on whether or not they would hold in-person classes. Now, the Rowan County Board of Education had a meeting on Tuesday night. Tell us a little bit about what happened.
Well, let me go back just a little bit and explain that the administrators and teachers have worked extremely hard preparing the entire summer to reopen school in some normal fashion. And I think we came up with some really good options for everybody that would have worked very well. However, that all changed when I received a call from the governor's office, and he requested that all schools delay in person until September the 28th. And what the public needs to understand is when the governor makes a recommendation like that, school districts really have no choice but to comply with his recommendation. If we were to not choose to go with the governor's recommendations, it would put us in a very difficult situation liability-wise, because our insurance carrier has already told us. We explored this back in March when the governor made the recommendation to close all schools, and superintendents across the Commonwealth began to question, you know, what if we decide not to do this? What if we decide to do something different? And one of the first things that came up was our insurance. And all of the insurance carriers, there's only a few major carriers that cover school districts across the state. And all of those carriers have said that if we choose to do something that's against the governor's wishes, that they would not support us and they would not cover us liability-wise. So we would be taking on all of that liability if someone were to become sick or ill or something like that. So that's a major concern. And then they've also got a lot of other avenues to make sure that we comply with the governor's recommendations. We have to deal with the Kentucky Board of Health. They could actually force us to close as well. They can withhold funding from us. There's lots of different avenues, and those were all covered in a webcast that was separate from the governor's call. We had a webcast that outlined, you know, all the ramifications that would happen if we choose not to go with the governor's recommendation. So we realize that this is a difficult situation. We know that it puts a real burden on some of the families that are out there. You know, I have two students in the system myself. The board chairman has a daughter that's in school out there. We've got one of our other board members with children in school. So, you know, this affects us personally just the same as everybody else. So we understand this puts a significant hardship on lots of different families in different ways. So this decision, it wasn't taken lightly by any means. And we've been weighing and contemplating, you know, what we should do and what was the best course of action. And so none of this was just randomly, haphazardly thought about. You know, we put a lot of planning into this. We put lots of thought into this. And really, when it all boils down, when the governor made that recommendation, we really don't have any choice but to comply and to go along with it. But, you know, at the same time, I think that everybody's trying to make the best decision on the side of safety for what's best for kids and what's best for our staff. You know, when you look at the last few weeks, infection rates have really went up. We've had significant increase in cases here in our county. I talked with some of the doctors over at St. Clair this week. I've also been in close contact with the local health department. all of those individuals, you know, will tell you that infections are spreading. It's very active in our area. It's very active across the state. Infection rates are continuing to go up. And there's lots of unknowns about what will happen if we were to bring kids back in session. And there's lots of unknowns about how this infection is really affecting kids at a young age. We know right now from listening to the doctors and things, we know that kids are recovering faster and don't have as significant symptoms. But one of the things they don't know is what the long-term effects are. You know, as a child ages, how much that may affect them in the future. So there's lots of unknowns, and I think that the governor and I think that everyone involved with these decisions have the best interest at heart with kids. We have lots of concerns, you know, for our staff and our teachers. You know, they work extremely hard as well. So, you know, Leanne, this has just been a very difficult situation. There are no easy answers, and I keep looking for the easy button somewhere, and I just can't find it.
I don't think the easy button exists in this one.
It's kind of like pick your poison, you know. There are no good choices. And but anyway, I do think that we've all you know we're going to delay the end start of school, and I feel like that we will have a good NTI program for kids going forward.
So the start date for classes at Rowan County is coming up soon.
That's correct. August the 26th will be the first day for students. We will continue with the adopted calendar just like normal. Teachers and schools will be checking in with parents and giving them explicit instructions about what will be coming up on those first days. I actually have a meeting today with all the principals, and we're going to be putting some plans in place about contacting parents and giving them instructions about what that first day will look like.
Out of curiosity, I was wondering what percentage of students before this happened had signed up to do in-person classes versus those who were doing hybrid or online.
We had about 50%. It was split about 50% across the district. And, you know, we were concerned. We thought maybe one school may see a real difference, but for the most part, it was split about 50% in every building. And, you know, at the high school, that would have put about, I think there was about 450 kids or so that were choosing to come in person, and about 500 that were choosing an online option. We usually have about 950, somewhere in that neighborhood at the high school. And those numbers were similarly played out at all the elementary schools as well.
Right. Now, because so many students are going to be learning from home, everybody will now that this decision has been made, there are some things that have to be taken into consideration as far as access goes. Not all the students in the county have reliable internet access at home, but the school system is working to find a solution to that.
Yes, we have been working extremely hard to try and find solutions because we do know that internet access is an issue for some of our families. And we have purchased a new online learning platform. It's called Schools PLP. We'll also be utilizing Google Classroom to get information out to kids. But we know in order to utilize those programs effectively, you've got to have good, reliable internet access, and you've got to have a good, you know, laptop or Chromebook or iPad or some device like that. So we have been looking, when we did our surveys back a month or so ago, one of those questions on that survey was asking, do you have a good device to work with, and do you have reliable internet access? The state did a similar survey across the state. So we have been pinpointing and identifying some of those households that do not have good access. And we have been working with a local company here called Ragent. And if you're familiar with Ragent, they specialize a lot in networks, and they work a lot with military contracts and those type of things, and setting up networks even in remote locations. So this was right down their alley, and so when we realized we had this issue, we began reaching out to Ragent, and they've been working with our local providers like Windstream and Spectrum and those folks, and our own technology person here in the district, Andy Conyers. And they've been meeting and working to try and come up with some solutions that would help some of those families. Another thing that we're going to be doing is we're going to be making Wi-Fi available at all of our elementary schools and high school, middle school, at all of our school locations. So if a family doesn't have access but has a device and wants to come out to one of the parking lots and get on the internet, that's going to be made available to them as well. And so we're also, principals will be reaching out to families to see who needs a good device. And we'll be checking Chromebooks out to some of those families that need a good device in order to be able to function and work. But Leanne, we do know that there are some families that would just prefer to have an old-fashioned paper and pencil work. And we will make those available to those families who just cannot get internet access or who for some reason just do not want that type of device maybe in their home. For whatever reason, then we will make just a traditional paper pencil packet available to them. We'll make a way for those kids to get some type of online learning as well.
In addition to internet access, another concern that is in the county, in most counties in eastern Kentucky especially, is food insecurity. And that's a big argument that a lot of people have for in-person classes. You know, this is how a lot of the students get fed. And the school system is working to address those problems as well.
Yes, we are. Leanne, we are planning to serve meals at all of our elementary locations, similar to the way we did at the end of last year. And that will be a drive-through service where families can drive to one of those locations and pick up a meal. And we will have more details on that coming out. And we're also going to be talking with setting up some programs with our counselors to provide counseling services, because we do know that mental health is an issue as well, and social and emotional health is very important to our families. And so we are going to be working out a program to where a student can receive mental health services and things. We've got some real good local partners, Mountain Comprehensive Care and Pathways, and then we've got our own counselors in-house as well. But we're going to be setting up some avenues for families to reach out that need support in social and emotional health as well.
Mm-hmm. And on that note, we're going to take a quick break here on Open Mic. We'll be right back after this.
Hi, I'm Dr. Tony Weaver for Health Matters. After 17 years and over 900 shows, Health Matters has finally decided to call it quits. We're airing our last show this weekend, so join us this weekend for Quits and ask your doctor if Health Matters might have been right for you.
Tune in to Health Matters Saturday mornings at 10 and Sunday mornings at 6 on Morehead State Public Radio.
And we're back here on Open Mic here at Morehead State Public Radio. I'm your host, Leanne Akers, and today we're visiting with Superintendent of Rowan County Schools, John Maxey. John, thanks again for being here. We wanted to talk a little bit about some of the things that are happening this fall. School will be all online, at least for the first 9 weeks. Before, we were prepping for different opportunities for students, depending on how things went down with the pandemic. And a lot of us who are parents, myself included, filled out an online form to say, you know, we want to have in-person classes for our student, or we want to do at home online learning for our student. We had options. So with now everybody will be online to begin the classes, how is that going to look for everyone? Will there still be like three different options, or will it be all one platform?
You know, everybody did a great job. We sent out electronic versions for people to sign up. And originally we were talking about calling everybody and just manually asking, but we thought, let's give everybody a chance to just sign up using some kind of electronic version. And we were amazed at the number of people who just used an online registration system and got signed up. And so they did a great job and they signed up for three different options. But to begin classes on August the 26th, all of that will be out the window now. And we will be starting everybody on the exact same platform They'll be utilizing Google Classroom. They'll be utilizing school's PLP program. But every student will be assigned a teacher. They'll be assigned in their grade level, just like they would normally enter into school. And that teacher and that building principal will be reaching out to each family so that they understand exactly what will be expected of them in this NTI version. And we elected to go last night. We elected to go, Leanne, for the first 9 weeks online. But one of the things that we stressed was that we will reevaluate this, you know, on September the 28th, we'll reevaluate everything. And if cases are back down to where we feel like it's safe to return to school, then we may return to school sooner than 9 weeks. But all of that information will be conveyed to parents in plenty of time. We just chose 9 weeks because that was when traditionally the quarters change over in all the schools. And it gives families something to plan. So if you have to line up childcare, you have to make some kind of different work arrangements, then you kind of know it's probably going to be for 9 weeks. But that could change on September the 28th if we feel like that cases are back to where they are acceptable and the governor releases us to go back to school, then we may reevaluate that.
I wonder about teachers, and there's a lot of people who are educators but also have children in the system. What are the teachers, the educators, going to be doing? Will they be reporting to the building? Will they be working from home? What's the plan there?
Teachers will be doing a variety of activities. You know, they will have to report to the buildings on some occasions to do professional development or to organize, get resources together, those types of things. They may not be in the building every single day, but they will be coming and going. Most of our teachers have really good, reliable internet access at home, and that will allow them to be able to work from home. And our whole goal in this is to reduce the number of people in our building so that we are in less risk of spreading this virus. So, you know, we're certainly going to encourage as many folks as we possibly can to work at home. But teachers will be coming and going in a variety of settings, so they'll have to report to work on some occasions.
Right. Now, there was some other discussion at the board meeting that happened this week, and some great news for the school district. The Clearfield Elementary School received some funding from the state that's going to allow a renovation project.
Yeah, absolutely. We're really excited about that. We've actually had a couple of great things happen in the last week over at Clearfield Elementary. One of the things, we had a local person there in the community who donated $10,000 to Clearfield Elementary to purchase Chromebooks. And that person just stepped up to the plate and said, hey, we want to do something special for Clearfield Elementary, and we feel like this is a way to help. And so we certainly appreciate that person that stepped up. I don't want to mention his name this morning because I haven't asked him if he wants to make that public or not.
Right.
But, you know, we're just really excited about that donation, and it will make a really significant difference in the lives of those kids over there at Clearfield Elementary. That will allow us to purchase about 50 Chromebooks, and that was something very special that we're excited about. We plan to make a press release, and that name will be made public, I feel sure, but I just don't want to mention it today. But anyway, the other big news that we got was that Clearfield Elementary was approved for a little over $7.5 million. And this occurred back in the legislative session back in the winter. And what happens across the state, they look at some of the biggest needs of buildings across the state, and they set aside what's called urgent needs funds. And Clearfield was deemed as a school building that had urgent needs, either in renovation or replacement. And so they allocated this $7.5 million. And we've been meeting with some architects, getting some paperwork together. We're going to submit that to the state. But it's the board would like to see that building renovated, and $7.5 million could really completely change that building. We could bring it up to code in every possible aspect. According to architects, we could make that building look new again. I mean, it has some roof issues. I mean, it's a really good building. It's a good, solid building. But it could use some new windows in it. It could use a roof on it. It could use a better, more secure entrance on the front of it. So, you know, it's just in need of a good overhaul. And, you know, Clearfield's in a great location over there. It serves lots of needs there in that community. And we'd certainly like to see it renovated. So this was a really exciting opportunity for us to get that building completely redone, get it a fresh look and get some everything up to code and get a new roof on it, new windows in it, new HVAC systems in it, new lighting in it, new flooring in it, a new secure vestibule in the front. So if we can get all this to go through, I think it'll be a great improvement there for Clearfield, and we're really excited about it.
Any idea when the district might start working on that project, or is it kind of still we're trying to make sure it happens?
Well, there's quite a bit of paperwork that has to be submitted to the Department of Education, and the first step is we have to select an architect, and the architect will put together what's called a BG1 form. It's a form that authorizes all the funding to be spent in the ways that we want to be spent on that renovation. And we send that to Frankfurt. Frankfurt reviews that plan, and if they're in agreement with it, then they'll send it back and say, yes, it's a go. Go ahead and advertise for bids and get that project rolling. So there's a couple of months here of just basically paperwork that we have to do to get final approval. And so once we get that, you know, the architects will draw up final plans and that type of thing. So it most likely would be next summer before we actually saw any physical work being done, because there are quite a bit, several months of just paperwork and logistics and drawings and things that have to be done first.
Well, speaking of renovations, there has been ongoing work at the old MCTC building up on Viking Drive in order to turn it into the new Board of Education building. The preschool will be there and the Bluegrass Discovery Academy. Where is the district on that reno project?
That project is coming along really nicely. We've been meeting regularly out there in construction update meeting. We just had one this past week, and the building's pretty much on schedule. We're a part of that project. We're renovating the concession stand out there by the football field, and it's adding restrooms on the back. I don't know. I'm sure, Leanne, with your children being involved in band and in football and all those type of things, you've been in those restrooms, and you know they really needed an upgrade.
Yes.
So when we renovated that project, we added on to the back of that concession stand, and we added restrooms on the back of that. They're really, really nice and a lot larger capacity. You know, we had old portable toilets sitting out front just to help with the capacity because the restrooms on that concession thing were so small. So when you go out there, and hopefully we'll be able to have some kind of football season. We don't know yet, but hopefully we'll have some kind of season. But anyway, if we do have a season, everybody will notice a really big improvement to our concession stand, which we're excited about. But the MCTC building is coming along really nicely. They're installing flooring and ceiling tile there in the central office area. It will probably be done just in a matter of the next few weeks. And then the center part of that building is the what will be the preschool and Head Start Center. And that is probably a couple of months away from being finalized, but it is really taking shape. It looks nice. They're putting some flooring down, finishing painting in those areas, and the same for the Bluegrass Discovery Academy. So when we're done out there, our Bluegrass Discovery Academy students and our preschool and Head Start students are going to have a state-of-the-art building that'll be really, really nice for many years to come. I think it'll serve this community well for many years. So something to be really proud of. And the architects and construction management people there at Pax Walker have done a great job with that project. It's going to be really nice when we're finished.
Well, unfortunately, we have run out of time here on Open Mic. Superintendent of Round County Schools, John Maxey, I really appreciate you talking with us today.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for tuning in to Open Mic. Our show is produced by Greg Jenkins, and our theme music is Turtle in the Creek, composed by Galen Green and performed by The Wooks. Produced by Moorhead State Public Radio with the generous support of listeners just like you. We'll see you next Friday.